This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Natasha, Maren, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
It is. I really enjoyed getting to take a look at Black Imagination, a project that in so many ways sounds like it culminates a lot of your life work. Before we jump into some of it, can you just explain to us that concept of Black Imagination and what it really refers to?
Yes. I was not one of those people that watched Game of Thrones when everyone else watched Game of Thrones. I had to be at like stage 4 in the pandemic, you know, to be like, okay, it's time. Game of Thrones is like the white imagination. And it's actually easier to explain the Black imagination by explaining the white imagination. That's everything that's familiar to us now, that's generated and manufactured to sustain this idea of like whiteness as other than like everyone. So Black imagination is an invitation to experience something other than the mainstream, which is the white imagination.
So in terms of talking about this project, Black Imagination, Black Voices on Black Futures, why did you want to create that? And can you give us a little bit of the backstory?
Yeah. You know, sometimes as a creative person, you sort of follow like a scent or a thought or a theme, and then you end up in this like magical universe that you couldn't have imagined. That is Black Imagination for me. It really began with a very simple prompt. What would parody look like if everything diasporic Black people on this planet have ever experienced were inverted and experienced by white identified people? What would that look like? And that was such a terrifying thought that Black imagination was born from that. It was like a recoil from that nightmare to what happens if we just center Black voices? What happens if each of us in our lives just take a moment to notice who's not talking? Who's not at the table? Whose voice isn't being heard? And how much can we gain from that? I think every human person has had that experience where you think you know something about somebody, but when you actually sort of silence your own assumptions, like put a pause on that and let that person present themselves to you, what we discover is the ultimate truth. We are all absolutely interconnected as literal and actual family on this planet. Nobody is more distant from anybody else than a cousin. Period.
Yeah.
That is reality. And we keep manufacturing a much smaller narrative for ourselves. And I think the way out of that, especially now at this crucial time where in which many people have been cooped up for a long time with their thoughts, is like really harnessing and recognizing the power of our imaginations, the power of each and every human being, no matter what you look like, to imagine something better for ourselves and each other.
When you think of the fact that so many people have been cooped up all around the world in so many different contexts, and the way that you've mentioned we've been alone with our thoughts in some way, when we do get the chance to share more of those thoughts, and even in lockdown, a lot of people are kind of expressing themselves in so many different ways, do you feel like it's going to be a good thing to hear that kind of unfiltered reflection on life that we've had in lockdown? Or do you feel like we're going to need to kind of work out our thoughts before we just put them out there? Because I know we can all get a little bit crazy when we're stuck with our own minds.
Yeah. That's an interesting question. I think sort of like some of one and a little bit of another. So like yes and no, both and. I think there's real power in listening. A lot of folks who are probably going to listen to this might be like commuting back and forth. It might be a moment in their day where their brain finally has to stop. And there are these magical radio moments that happen where you're in a position in your life and the radio is like talking to you, like you there. I'm speaking to you specifically. Do you need to cultivate more spaces for listening in your life? What are you missing? Who are you missing? You know, a lot of people are in relationships that have been very challenged by the pandemic.
Yes.
Right? A lot of us are listening to the radio and the songs that are playing are touching us in a particularly deep fashion because everyone has experienced everything that there is to experience on planet Earth. There's always somebody there who has felt what you're feeling or has gone through what you're going through. And it's so validating. It's so validating to feel heard and seen and acknowledged. And Black Imagination is a project that does center the Black experience in that because what are we all missing collectively when there are voices that are not brought to the table? You know, whether right. that's our elders, whether that's children, what are we all collectively missing by not hearing these stories, by not just being witnesses to the larger human truth of our experience?
Mm. And in Black Imagination, it's a beautiful cover. I encourage everybody to at least go and look at the cover of this.
So gorgeous. The artwork Vanessa is, German.
Right. Credit, total credit to her, because it's just fantastic. But when you open it up, it's really a series of poems and reflections, and just even some are short, some are long, but they all share the story of a voice that, like you've said, maybe hasn't been heard in another context. Can you tell us a little bit about the people that you included in it, some of their stories and why they were the ones that you chose to contribute?
Yeah. So we hear a lot of narratives that go unexamined. And one of those is like, it's just too hard to get every, you know, intersectional experience included. You know, how can you find children's voices? How can you find trans voices? And I just get so irritated by the lack of effort. So this is a project that came from actual conceptual art experiences. So the first iterations of Black Imagination would be like Laura showing up to a gallery. And then I would blindfold you and I would introduce, you'd be protesting. It would already be pitch black inside. And then I'd introduce you to our docent, who is a nationally recorded vocal artist who's also legally blind. And most people at that point are like, might want to stop complaining right now because it sounds like this is purposeful. But she would be led through like a maze of voices, a whole experience of different voices responding to these prompts. So this is an audio experience to begin with, which is so exciting that it's now an audio book. And I want to caution people that although you said it's poetry, if you're out there and you're allergic to poetry, I assure you that this will not give you hives, because I also sometimes suffer from a poetry allergy. You know, sometimes you just want people to just tell me what's going on.
Yeah.
So there are beautiful poets and writers in here, but it's like a collection of voices. It's an audio experience that takes place in book form and also in audiobook form. So the contributors are vast. Like, their experiences are as vast as the experiences of every human on the planet. They just all happen to share an identity of being Black. That is something that we want to turn into a monolithic experience. But in truth, when we examine that, and just if we open ourselves to even listen to a book like Black Imagination, you can recognize right away, anyone of any intelligence can recognize right away, that there is no cookie cutter Black experience. There is no one Black experience. The Black experience is the human experience. And if you're out there and you're curious, or if you're Black and you're like, hey, this is for me, it is. It's for you. And it's also for everyone who's curious about what, you know, what is life like for other people if I don't trust the cookie cutter version that's being sold to me.
Yeah, it allows you, no matter who you are, what your background is, to just see the world through the lens of someone else for a minute. And there's a lot that you can learn from that. And I do wonder, for you personally, why did you feel like such a burden to bring these stories to life, to be part of the group of people who want to elevate awareness of the Black experience? And like you say, that part of the human experience, why was that something you felt responsible to do?
You know, it's funny. You mentioned it as a burden, and I think that it has been the biggest joy. The biggest joy in my life thus far has been what I have given myself in terms of like healing and growth and understanding just by the kinesthetic practice of listening. You know, for this book to come together, I spent years just asking people questions and listening to the answer. And it was in the way that I was listening that, you know, co-created the moment of import. It wasn't just that they were sharing. It was also that I was listening as though every word that was coming out of this person's mouth, whoever they are, if they're a child, if they're, you know, a former sex worker, it didn't matter. I treated everybody with the same amount of respect as though they had something to share with me. And every single time, that's exactly what happened. It turns out that we're all walking around in these little meat suits, right? And we think we're having such a unique experience. I don't know about that. I think most of us out there, we care about the same sorts of things. We want to feel safe. We want to feel valued. We want to feel loved. And that's not an experience that only Black people have, but it's very interesting to witness the nuances that come with the Black experience in terms of just like, how do we position ourselves in terms of safety? How do we position ourselves in terms of value when we were, at least, you know, in this country, the first form of capital? You know, what does it mean to feel loved if, you know, systems have literally been designed to dismantle the family, you know, the community? So yeah, depending on where people are, I really do think that seekers find what they're looking for often. And I definitely found a lot from this project. I found a lot of grace. I found a lot of joy. You know, for all the media propaganda around sort of like the pornography of Black trauma, Black people are extremely joyful. We are still here. Like, how many times and ways have there been attempts to eradicate us? And yet we are still here. And I think it's powered by joy. So it has not actually been a burden at all. I've been so filled up with joy and hope and life witnessing beautiful Black people everywhere just share what their lived experience is.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you share it that way and frame it that way, because I feel like in listening to what you're saying, I hear, you know, there's themes that all of us experience as humans, whether it is joy, whether it's pain, whether it's trauma, whatever it might be. And in what you've created, we get the chance to learn how that looks for different groups of people that some of us may be more connected to and others of us are maybe more disconnected from. But those same experiences of pain, trauma, love, whatever, those give us an entry point to say, hey, let me understand this and let me see this from your point of view. But one of the things you do with Black Imagination is not just bring these stories to light, you also are wanting people to understand how Black people who have felt hurt have found healing, have found ways where they can step through what their experiences might have been. What were some of the things that your contributors said and how they've found healing from some of their really deep, really personal traumas?
I am very fortunate that this project exists almost as a community that you can take with you, like a portable community. So for those of us who feel lonely and isolated, it's like a group of folks are right there, and they're all living currently, knock on wood. And one person in my sort of Black imaginary community and my literal actual community is Reagan Jackson. And Reagan, when asked, how do you heal yourself? Reagan said, first, I listen. This is hard when my feelings are screaming, when my body, my heart, the pieces of me are aching. Sometimes it's easier to talk, to pray, to complain, to beg, to demand. I do these things too. But then I listen and I follow. There's a guiding star that talks to me. I don't know her name or even her language. Mostly she's a dreamwalker of pictures, sounds, and feelings, and I awake knowing what is mine to do. Is she an ancestor or unborn child, guardian angel, spirit guide, or interdimensional healing practitioner? I don't know. I just know that when I listen and I follow directions, healing happens. Sometimes there's a ceremony involved, candles or water, writing letters or burning pictures, the release of song or tears. At these times, I feel most acutely the loss of my cultural traditions. We, the children of the unchosen diaspora, the progeny of the stolen, the kidnapped, the shackled, the tortured, the enslaved, are in many ways still lost, lost to our heart language, lost to our indigenous practices. We pray to white Jesus, God of colonizers, and wonder why our prayers aren't answered. With no disrespect to Jesus, to Buddha, to Allah, to any of the gods who come round here, but we are the daughters not of Jacob and Abraham, but of Oshun. So long estranged, I can only listen and guess, make do with plastic cowrie shells and white fabric, pray in English, and hope that there is something beyond my colonized words, that some part of me is still me enough to be heard and healed anyway.
That right there is why this is an audio experience as well, because that is just beautiful. So beautiful. And I think there's something in that to take away that really says to us, you want to be able to lean into that true part of yourself, not just what you've become because of the surroundings around you.
Well, let Lena Waithe tell it to you. You know what I'm saying? Because Reagan reads it beautifully. And I probably just did a sham job, you know, but
Yeah. And while you are getting into the deep end of stuff in listening to this book, it's also oddly relaxing and oddly kind of comforting, you know, in ways as well. But one of the other things that you spoke to your contributors about was how they would feel loved and safe, what a world would look like where that was how they felt. Was there anything in their responses that really stood out to you in how they answered that?
A few people circled back with sort of the same feedback, which was, when I read the question or the prompt, describe or imagine a world where you are loved, safe, and valued, it seemed fun and approachable. And so they approached this question with some levity in their heart. And when actually bringing forth the answer, many people encountered like a very deep sadness that it was so challenging to do that work. I know you don't have a ton of time, but I'd love to just give you a little taste.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kenyatta J.P. Garcia of Albany, New York, when responding to that prompt, said, "If I felt safe, valued, and or loved, I wouldn't be the person you know of as me. I was raised up with fear. The hood was a scary place to grow up. I was brought up as disposable. Little queer Negroes like me aren't worth much in this country, and I don't think I know what love is. Maybe not even platonic or brotherly love. Safe, for me, usually means being alone. My value in this world isn't about me. It's about my work. I am what I can produce. Love is a lie. I think if I could find a more ideal world for myself, I wouldn't even want to live there. I am my struggles and solitude. I don't trust safety. I devalue value, and love is an extreme version of joy. I'm not here to be happy, but if others can be, I'm here for that."
Mm.
And I mean, certainly not every response is the same, like I've said, but there was like a whole faction of folks who were like, holy I can't, I don't know that I can imagine this. Like, it's a real challenge to imagine myself safe, valued, and loved.
Wow.
I'd like to think that we all want that isn't unique to any one person on the planet, that ultimately I think we deserve to be safe and valued and loved long before we put a Starbucks on the moon. Like,
right. Yes. Yeah, if that's going to be our measure, then definitely yeah. I feel like safe, valued, and loved needs to come first 100%.
And exactly.
I wonder as well. I mean, I'm a girl from Australia. You're living in the States. There's so much about our experiences that can be connected, but then there's obviously some real cultural differences. And I feel like it's important in this conversation to recognize that you've got obviously the Black experience that you've brought to light. And then you've got so many others internationally around that want to lean in, that are curious, that want to know what we can do to, I guess, be more aware of what's going on, but then also step up in some way to kind of help shape this world where everyone of all descriptions is feeling those things of safety and love. What do you think the role of the non-Black, even non-American voice is in contributing to Black futures?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Black voices that are gathered together in this collection are intersectional and international already. So the thing with like the diaspora is we are all like spread out literally like, you know, dandelion seeds everywhere. And we are just growing wherever we are. And some of us got to stay like at home on the continent, but many of us have had to forge new paths. And I think that's part of the human experience. Humans are remarkably resilient while also sort of like very self-defeating. Like the way yeah. we do things is also very peculiar. But I think that these ideas, as they exist as Black imagination, Black voices on Black futures, you know, brought to life by the ridiculously amazing Lena Waithe and David Diggs. What it really is just a testament to our humanity. Are you human? Then just show me, because there should be space for my voice. Mm. Your voice shouldn't have to take up center stage if we're all in this together. Are you hurting over there? That affects me too. Because when you're hurting, you can't show up for the people who need you. You know, so we're all motivated, self-motivated to heal, to listen to each other, to find that validation, find that sense of self, and then make room for the other people on this planet that we are sharing it with. So I don't think I don't even want to sell it to you. Does that make sense?
Right. Like, yes.
If you want to come, you're already invited. You're already family. I think for many people, just realizing, just unlearning these dominant narratives about what Blackness is or isn't, is it's such a gift you can give to yourself.
Yeah, I think any kind of label, no matter where you're from, what your race is, I think it's really hard to be identified just because of the color of your skin or your nationality. But for you, what does Blackness mean? Because it's a term we hear thrown around in a lot of different contexts, but what do you see that as meaning for yourself?
I think it means original human being of planet Earth. That's the shorthand I'm hearing because, you know, it's the only type of indigeneity that is visibly recognizable because you can't actually see indigeneity. There's indigenous people all over planet Earth, right? There's not like one phenotype, but it's one particular phenotype that upon recognition, you started in Africa, where all the humans started. So if we're seeing Blackness, we should be recognizing Blackness as humanity. And that's all.
I wonder, we're at a time in history where people are so rich and ready and like ripe to embrace all forms of race or whatever it might be. People are ready to embrace everyone. How do you feel like the next generation can be shaped in a way where the narratives of our past that are detrimental or the dividing lines between different cultures, we don't want that to continue into the future? Do you feel like there's a way we can be raising the next generation and speaking to people now that doesn't carry the negatives of our past into the future, but allows that freedom to walk in kind of full healing, I would say?
Yeah, I think in any circumstance where in which a great pain or loss has been experienced, it is a fundamental step to take some accountability. And I think that means for each individual, it really does mean unlearning nonsense, you know, and that's work everyone has to do for themselves. So if you've been told over and over and over again, you know, Black people are scary, Black people don't feel pain, you know, in the medical industry, it's up to you to sit down, listen, do the research, like find out for yourself, just the way, like if you have a belief system, it's up to you to challenge that, not just willy-nilly just for so, but so that you can know what you believe is still holding up. It's still true for you. That's why you still believe it every day. You know, if this notion of Blackness that individuals are sustaining, including Black people, because we also have internalized oppression, if it's not serving you, if it's not serving our collective growth and evolution, our togetherness, our recognizing each other as family, so we can all be safe, valued, and loved, then you can let it go. You can release that. That's how we move together in the future, is first we have to take account and responsibility for creating and sustaining false narratives that don't serve everyone, and recognize the value in really including all the voices available in whatever narrative we're creating for ourselves. And then understanding that imagination for all people throughout all time has been the way that we create anything of any substance or value. Let's imagine past this moment. Let's imagine what that looks like when we really do look at each other and we see human being.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.